This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. The Trade Association of VIXA has been running a series of digital signage power hours for the last few months. Bring together industry experts in a roundtable format to talk about a specific topic each time. The most recent one was about LED, and I was once again the moderator and referee. The panel had Chris Regal of Stratacache, who among a bazillion other things is spinning up a micro LED manufacturing facility in Oregon. We also had on the panel Reese Kurtenbach, the CEO of Daktronics, one of the oldest and largest DirectView LED firms out there. We had Johanna Ocampo from D3, Rich Ventura from Sony, which introduced the world to large format micro LED, and Sam Phoenix, who runs her own display consulting firm and is deeply involved with the VIXA and SID. We also had Florian Rotberg of Munich-based consultancy Invitus. The session has two parts. First, there's a brief presentation by Regal that focuses on micro-LED and how disruptive it will be in this market. Then we go into the roundtable, followed by some questions. If you're involved in or looking at LED, this is well worth the listen.
Key topic today is LED and micro-LED. I'm going to take a little bit of a different stance towards the future of LED and micro-LED than you might see in many presentations or webinars, where I'm not going to talk as much about what it is, but I'm going to open the dialogue around what does it mean, and what does it mean from a business and from an industry perspective. So specifically with micro-LED, like it or not, micro-LED is going to foster disruptive change to the visual display industry. What that will mean in your businesses, what that will mean for your customers, what that will mean for your lives, for the lives of consumers around the world, is the interesting kind of play, and then how we as an industry participate in that. I would expand that from the pure definition of digital signage to really all forms of visual display. And micro-LED will break a ton of barriers as you understand what the technology is and where that will sit to expand well beyond digital signage into more and more aspects of visual display and smart display being part of your everyday life. The analogy I'm going to set up from a business perspective is equating micro-LED to the wildcatters and the frackers that you have here in the U.S. Visual display today on a global basis is a cartel, much like OPEC. That cartel rests principally in Asia, and that cartel controls 99% plus of all of the display production today. Visual display as a marketplace is a $200 billion per year market as part of the $1.8 trillion consumer electronics market. What you'll see in my next slides is that micro-LED is going to change that landscape and change that landscape drastically. With the cartel in visual display today, the cost of entry, the cost of building a display plant, whether that be TFT LCD, whether that be OLED, is immense. Somewhere between $8 and $12 billion for the average fab. Micro-LED is going to completely upend that. And I believe, and I think I can say in prediction, in the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to see the display industry explode all around the world with new companies, new competitors, new brands. And micro-LED will break that cartel and make that technology capable on a global basis. If you look at energy as a good analogy, in 1973, OPEC controlled 48% of energy production globally, where the fracking industry had 0% market share. In 2020, the OPEC market has declined and the fracking market has exploded up to 9% of total energy production. Not because of a change in the energy market itself, but because of a change in technology. And micro-LED brings a similar change, whereby which the order of magnitude in which you can participate in that market changes greatly. The change in the economic model. When you look at these very large LED, OLED plants, these are $8, $10, $12 billion per plant. The reason that micro-LED is a game changer is that a micro-LED fab can be spun up to build a product that is more advanced, that is more capable, with better characteristics, better life cycles, and better performance as a display at 1/25 the cost of a traditional fab. So the economic model that is going to break here and why the cartel will break is that all of a sudden you will see a number of companies that will be able to take advantage of this marketplace because the barrier to entry has been dramatically, dramatically lowered. And all of the capital equipment investments over the last 10 years, 15 years in Asia become arguably almost useless because of the upending of this market and the technology that micro-LED is bringing to it. With micro-LED, the genie is out of the bottle. And when I say that, because that capital requirement up front has been greatly compressed, visual display is in all aspects of your life. Entertainment, telecommunications, automotive, defense, everything in tech needs some form of visual display. And micro-LED starts to allow that to happen in multiple countries. You've seen on the global scene a number of the trade difficulties between the US and China, India and China. Today, there is arguably, other than large format LED, there is no high definition manufacturing of LED at scale in the United States. Same thing Europe, same thing India as marketplaces. Micro-LED breaks that model and opens that up where you'll start to see countries that have strategic interests being able to pull those LED manufacturing plants back from Asia and into their native markets. More interesting, as with all things in consumer electronics and applying to that, micro-LED is also cheaper than traditional LED and OLED type platforms. So you'll see a 32% plus lower cost in the cost to manufacture that, excluding the cost of the factory. So you're going into an era where the products that micro-LED can make are not only better, stronger, faster, but also cheaper. So you have the performance advantage as well as the cost advantage coming through to that market, and that's what will further foster disruption. What does this mean for your business? In the AV industry, the digital signage industry, the visual display industry, there's going to be a lot of change in the next several years. Because technology was so tightly controlled at visual display, because the cost was such a barrier to entry, the amount of innovation in visual display has been decent, but not great. Micro-LED breaks that innovation ceiling because of the capital required. You're going to see a lot of new players in this space on a global basis. Companies that you might think of in other sectors, whether that be microchip, semi, other, are all heavily looking at and starting to get involved in that micro-LED business because of the possibilities. With the new micro-LED products, whether they be bendable, flexible, transparent, ultra-low power use, or other, they'll start to breed an entire new class of products and technologies that heretofore have not been able to be viewed. The future with micro-LED looks much more like a Philip K. Dick novel than it does what you would perceive of display being today. And that will allow the display industry to grow. I think that you'll see in the next 5 years the path for visual display to grow from a $200 billion a year market to an $800 to $900 billion a year market, not exclusively on micro-LED, but as a part of that micro-LED mix, dramatically opening the amount and the number of LED displays, micro-LED displays that you'll see in your everyday life. That vision of being able to deliver new and cool and differentiated solutions, we're just at the very tip of that iceberg.
So that was Chris. Now the panel portion kicks in with me leading off. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a really good panel, a bunch of very highly seasoned people who've been around the industry for a long, long time. We've got Chris Riegel, obviously, from Stratacache. Rich Ventura, who you may know from NEC, he's now with Sony heading his B2B division. Sam Phoenix, who you probably know from Layard and Planar, and she's now an independent consultant. Reese Kurtenbach, who is the CEO of Daktronics, one of the biggest LED companies out there and the oldest, and Reese is one of the oldest people out there. And Johanna Ocampo, who you may know from Silicon Core, but she's now at D3 LED, good friends of mine. I'm going to ask Sam to kind of kick this off. She's an R&D person, understands all this stuff. For those who don't understand the difference between regular SMD LED, mini LED, and micro LED, if you could give like the Cliff Notes version of what these things are so people understand what the differences are, because Chris really sort of got people thinking, I'm sure, about, okay, what is this micro LED thing?
Yeah, and I'll promise I won't get too deep. But if people do want to get really deep in it, I recommend they go look at SID, Society for Information Display. We just had Display Week a month ago. The content's available for until December. If you want to look at more technical PhD papers on this topic, then you can imagine, shoot me a note and I'll get you the contact info to log in, or you can just look for displayweek.org. But at a high level, think a traditional direct view LED that you've all seen it back in the before time when we were at trade shows and you saw all these, Chinese pavilions at trade shows with direct view LED. You were looking at a surface mount part that had a red, green, and blue pixel inside that component. So that component was picked and placed onto a PCB substrate. There's lots of debate about what size is a micro LED and a mini LED, and it seems like everything every few months it starts going down and down. I would say an easy rule of thumb is if it's over 100 microns, then it's 100 to 300 is somewhere around mini LED. Less than 100, arguably less than 50, is micro LED. And in that case, these very small pixels are individually picked, individually placed on a substrate rather than being packaged into a part and then placed. And there's lots and lots of research. I know Chris was trying to get some conversation going about painting a future. I would caution just a little bit, even though I love new technology, is that there are still problems to be solved in that supply chain. There's lots of opportunity for innovation. Tons of money is going at it. There's lots of different ways of transferring these tiny little pixels. Do you print them? Do you pick and place them? Lots and lots of research. I would also caution, and I'll throw this out there too, is there's a lot of overcapacity, a lot of sunk cost in China on LCD. And these mini LEDs make for great backlights that make for very nice local dimming, which make for very competitive against OLED. So if anything, it's just going to be super interesting to see how this plays out, because there's a lot of different balls in the air.
Mm-hmm. I've gotten a sense in going to trade shows and talking to people that we're going to go from SMD to micro LED, and mini LED, as you just said, will probably more be a backlight thing. Is that the general sense among the group, that mini LED is not something that you're going to see directly marketed as a display itself, but more as kind of an underlying tech? Reese, how about you?
I think if you look at the LED landscape, I agree with Krista's vision that we're going to see digital everywhere. These dynamic screens are going to start appearing everywhere. And depending on the situation, the location where the screen's at, how big the audience, you might see a different technology as being the best fit for that location and that situation. And so then if it's a very tight pixel pitch, a very close viewing, micro LED is going to increasingly be seen as preferred. Although what Sam said about the LCD, old technologies die hard, right? Those old technologies are going to find ways to survive and live and provide value as micro LED and these other LED technologies continue to grow and find their spot in the display landscape. So you'll see traditional SMD, you'll see some type of bare chip, whether it's in a size that's called mini, or a bigger size or a smaller size, and then something that is truly micro LED that, as Sam said, 50 microns and smaller. And these dimensions kind of, it's hard to imagine in your mind, but the number of micro LEDs you can get out of a traditional manufacturing process is orders of magnitude more than you can get out of a manufacturing process making traditionally sized LEDs.
Okay. Rich, you're in an interesting position, both in your old gig and your new one, in that you have both LCD and LED product. And I can remember in the last few years how there was this general sense that there was going to be about a five-year transition period of LCD video walls being supplanted by LED video walls. Where do you think we are with that?
You know, it is interesting coming from a display company that focused heavily in LCD video walls and LED, and now to a display company that the focus is on LED. As we look at with our CLED product and beyond. I'm hearing and seeing more and more from our customers and our partners the need and want to move to the LED. We're seeing a lot more interest. We're seeing life expectancies, the shapes and sizes they can go to, the ability of picking different pixel pitches based on the job. As Reese had mentioned, I think we're going to have all the different technologies now open up those new flexibilities for us. We still have that cost barrier, and I think we're seeing that cost barrier becoming smaller, not completely shrunk down, but it is getting smaller. But I will say we're seeing it's definitely a lot larger amount of interest to make the migration now or in this near 12 months than we did, say, a year ago even. I think we even saw that at the last trade show we all got to attend at ISE. We saw a lot more focus and emphasis on LED, a lot more of the conversations around that. We're hearing this from more and more of the AV integrators, the distribution partners, and the end users. It's LED. That's the conversation we're having. I do agree that old tech dies hard. I mean, we're still deploying projectors in areas that we thought would have migrated over to displays years ago. But I do think we're going to continue to see more and more migration to LED due to production getting easier, availability getting easier. It's going to be a pretty dramatic difference as we go into 2021.
Chris, I was interested in what you said about how the costs of micro LED are so wildly less than a traditional fab plant. You said 1/25th of the cost. I'm sure there are people watching this thinking, well, then why is micro LED, as it's now being marketed, so insanely expensive? And how is that going to change? And when will that change?
That's a great question. Today, I think that micro LED is that ultra premium. And really, the products that you see today that are calling themselves micro LED, they're probably more in that mini range than true micro. That being said, with the, as Sam pointed out, I think she said very appropriately, the science is not perfected yet. So I think you're looking at another 12, 18, 24 months. From our standpoint, from other standpoint, where there are still aspects of the physics and the physical science and transfer science and other to really hone this down and perfect this. So are you going to see full micro LED products early 2021? No. Early 2023? Yeah, much more realistic. That being said, in the cost model, where you look at these sunk costs of the factories that you have in Asia Pacific, where you have effectively tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars sunk to build these factories. Those costs die hard. Those are on 20, 30, 50 year amortizations. So the Asian manufacturing base will try to modify and try to keep those factories viable as long as they possibly can from a jobs perspective. But realistically, when the cost of the new product is so much lower and the visual characteristics of it are so much higher, it's a highly, highly disruptive thing. Another potential analogy is General Motors and Ford as Tesla comes along. It's a disruptive technology that a customer will say, hey, that's cool and it can do more things. But now what if the Tesla were half the price of the GM car that's the equivalent? All of a sudden, that's a big market changer. And I think that's the disruptive nature of micro LED.
Johanna, you're very much customer facing. What are people after? What are you hearing from them? Why are they interested in LED? And are they particularly fixated on a particular type? Do they want super fine pixel pitch or just like they want that big canvas?
Yeah. A majority is really about the bigger canvas. I mean, you've got video walls that customers are accustomed to as the product becomes more mainstream. You find customers are not so concerned about the price, or they're used to the price now. So they'll start to look at, we want to put this in our retail. We want to put this in corporate applications. We want to just fill the walls of our broadcast studios, all of those things. Customers are very keen on that ambiance that Florian talked about, as well as that brand recognition by having large LED displays.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
Has the demand changed at all because of what's been going on the last 6 or 7 months? When I was seeing a lot of interest in direct view LED on these big canvases, it was in office tower lobbies, very large places like airports and so on. And these are businesses and operations that have been greatly impacted by COVID-19. And I wonder if the demand is still there for those things.
Well, it's quite interesting. Flagship stores are still being built, even especially from online brands, because they need this physical space. And so at least over here in Europe, we see the big, you know, the big rollouts, they're not really going to happen currently. But we see a lot of new flagship stores, these really fancy ones being built, and there's almost none of them without, large LED coming up. So LED is coming. I don't see it in meeting rooms, to be honest. That's something, everyone, talked about, but that's still a long way to go. And there, standard projection or LCD is still doing fine. But in lobbies and especially in flagship stores, we still see a big demand there.
So what I've seen and what I've heard anecdotally is because of COVID and because the world took a pause, there was a lot of projects that were able to be done. So Vegas, they went in and did a bunch of stuff in casinos, like projects that got accelerated because there were no people there. Airports, same thing, because they recognize for airports, when people get back to traveling, how do they make money? Duty free, like the example that Florian showed, which I think is a really nice one because it shows a lot of different display technologies all used in the same space to create an experience. And that's my cue for everybody to take a shot because I said the word experience. You should say the new normal too, right? But I think that as we move forward back into society, I think people are craving that ability to get together and experience things together in large format. That's what facilitates it. And so I'm seeing more demand for large format and for outdoor too, because people are recognizing we're going to have to deal with the fact that we don't necessarily want to be inside together. So this notion of like live events where it's this hybrid between a streamed event and then a regional event with large screens that people can come together in their own region where they can travel, experience content, network with each other, and still feel like they're part of a big something. I'm seeing a lot of activity for those. So what I've seen.
Dave, I would postulate that what we've seen in the retail practices is that the retail store is now moving out to the curb. So whether that be curbside pickup, whether that be in a retail space, a QSR or other, I think you're definitely seeing more of those outdoor applications where the customers are afraid to get out of their cars or want to have that experience or that convenience. And I think that expands the display market even further.
Yeah, and I think one thing I'll just add to that is applications are evolving. We've talked about, Chris is talking about outdoor, totally changing it, but there's also the LEDs are coming to the windows more. So now we're having, if someone's walking down the street, they're engaging through the windows where we may have placed an LCD or a projector before we're seeing that. But the interesting thing, counter what Florian is saying, we are seeing a lot of interest in LED in the boardroom, but in a different way than we thought before. Before we thought is it's going to be this really large boardroom. And what we've seen now is what used to be the focus of these little huddle rooms, we now have the new huddle room, which is 24 by 20. So it's a bigger room. They're calling it huddle rooms, even though it's the size of a conference room. So we are seeing interest in that space. And we are seeing where, as Samantha said, people are investing because there's nobody to inconvenience because we're doing the construction. That is, we're seeing projects that were on hold that are coming back quickly because they know when we come out of this, whenever it is, they have to be ready to sell. They have to be ready to inform. They have to be ready to engage.
I'm curious, though, the challenge with a lot of direct view LED, even at the fine pixel pitches, you just still need to be 6, 7, 8 feet back to really kind of appreciate it and for the visuals to tighten up. If you start getting into things like operational items, like curbside pickup and all that, where you have to say Mr. Regal or order 685, is the resolution for LED as going to tighten up to the level of what an outdoor ready LCD can do so that people can, it's legible basically?
Those lines are crossing now where you're seeing that it's not particularly resolution that LED can do that today, it's cost. So a TFT LCD in an outdoor enclosure is still an order of magnitude lower in cost than an LED. As those technologies on the LED side reduce, because that LED is able to operate in all weather conditions or other things, it'll be a cheaper install. So it's price that's a driver, not technology. And as we all know in the tech business, price is a 2 or 3 year cycle that's constantly decreasing. It's just, when do those lines cross?
Is it so when that happens, is that more likely to be micro LED or SMD or 4-in-1 chips, whatever it may be?
I think it could be both. It will really depend on the use cases where in that kind of a footprint in outdoor where micro LED has the opportunity for high brightness up to 70,000 nits or other. So you can get super bright, super thin, super easy to install. But some of the other features like low power doesn't really matter because you're on constant power. So it could be either. Again, it will probably be cost driven. And if micro LED could deliver that at a cost advantage to traditional LED, the best, cheapest technology will win.
Hmm. Reese, a lot of your business has been historically around big stadiums and very large displays in live event venues. And obviously live event venues are very different right now. There's actually, you could make the argument there's more LED being used because there are virtual fans in the stands and so on. What's going on with your business?
So in our business, we would have a sports or a live event side. You would have advertising on premise or third party. And then we are also active a lot in the transportation areas, over the road and then mass transit. Depending on what area you are in, the business of that customer has changed. COVID has impacted so many areas of our life. I do agree with Rich and Sam that depending on the customer, there are projects being greenlit, there are projects going in, but they're different today. And they're really focused on this, on the recovery. We need to be prepared to capitalize on people coming back, this pent up demand that most of us anticipate. But in the live events business, sports are being played. But if you're in the concert and touring business, that's a long time before that comes back. And so you're going to see some of these. I think some of us have maybe flown, but who's gone on a long haul flight, you know, a 16 hour flight? Some of these things are going to come back much more slowly than others. And we're seeing retail, we're seeing out of home, we're seeing some of these places continue to invest in digital, and a good portion of that digital is LED. And we believe from Dectronics' perspective, it'll continue to be that way.
Joanna, what are you seeing in terms of retail demand? Do they have budget now, or is it kind of gone away or on hold?
Well, I think some of our customers are just taking a moment, again, to kind of think about the experience that they have. And then there are some that are moving forward with their plans. It really kind of depends on where they are in the cycle and where they are with their businesses. Those that are more involved in entertainment are going to be, you know, taking that step and looking at how they're using their displays for entertainment. But they're also looking at those people wanting to come back and come back strong. So we're also seeing some interesting things happening. Even during COVID, we were able to work with a company called Ben TV, and they're doing broadcast for gaming, esports, and pop culture. And that was all designed and discussed and installed during COVID. So there's that kind of shift where they want to be able to communicate more, and they've got a broadcast studio to do that.
Mr. Riegel, I'm curious, and I suspect many are, that you've acquired a empty building in Eugene, Oregon, old Corning plant, and then it was something else before that, and you're building a micro LED facility in the United States. And I would imagine there's all kinds of people who would think, well, why wouldn't you just get this contract manufactured over in wherever, in China, Shenzhen, wherever it may be, as opposed to doing it in the United States?
I think there's a number of points there. One, the virus specifically has shown to many of the large consumer electronics companies, many of the tech companies, that Asian supply chains can be vulnerable. So as I think in many of our businesses, we all started getting those calls in early February, early March, that said, hey, can't get product for another 10, 12, 20 weeks. So you saw that disruption, you saw that materially impact business on many different sectors. So the ability to say, within the boundaries of the United States, we can build all necessary components to have a completely US-based manufacturing operation for display, one big advantage. No tariffs, no worries about supply chain. Two, I'm pretty certain that whether I'm talking about an F-35 fighter or a tank, it doesn't necessarily make sense to have a display in that says made in China. So there's a strategic benefit to it. Will display in the US challenge the incumbency of the consumer electronics business? Probably not. I'm very confident that we can fight any competitive environment in B2B, but the B2C, the Chinese can have that. There's no margin there in the first place, and I'm not going to outmuscle Xi Jinping at any time in the future. So the base point to say, if you're picking your battles correctly, if you're going after those commercial marketplaces, and if you go after the specialty that things like micro LED can provide, there's a very, very viable market here in the US.
Rich, about 5 years ago, maybe it was four, went to Infocom, walked by the Sony booth, and there was this huge display, and me along with a lot of other people were kind of going, what is that? And it was the first micro LED display, and it's now 4 or 5 years out from that. And it seems to be the same product. Is it something that is indeed evolving?
It is evolving. I mean, part of it is evolving because of the projects themselves are asking for certain things, whether it's a different resolution to it, or they're asking for us to add function and features to it. And, you know, recently we were talking with one of our clients who we're deploying a wall here fairly soon with, and they love the fact that we are evolving and that we just didn't hold our laurels to what we showed four or five years ago. Part of that is with our technology partners that are involved in the design and with customers, as well as the overall integrators have been involved in the design, so we continue to improve it. I think what I've really challenged our organization is, now how do we take it to that next level? Because I do see a lot of growth in that specific market for us. But I also see growth in the other aspects of LED as well. The one thing too that I will say is that applications are changing how we use the product. So it isn't a signage product. It isn't a lobby product. It isn't something that goes onto a TV stage. It's actually for everything. And so the more we get, we look at the applications, the more we are looking at how we evolve the product going forward.
Chris kind of alluded to this. Will micro LED get to a point where it competes on a size, on a level of size with a conventional 75-inch LCD, so you could get a 75-inch micro LED display that would look as good as, let's say, a Samsung QLED or LG OLED?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. In what time frame?
What time frame, and then the cost benefit. As Sam was saying, there's a lot of ability for LCD manufacturers to monetize their CapEx investment. But I believe in the next 2 to 3 years, you will see micro LED displays available that would rival a 75-inch LCD, but they'll be more expensive than a 75-inch LCD that you could get.
So why would somebody buy it then?
Just because? I think as you heard here, that depending on the situation and what's happening, the LCD may not be the best technology. If it's outdoor, curbside, you want something outdoor intensity, you want it to withstand an outdoor environment, maybe the LCD isn't the best thing for that situation. And, you know, there is probably an ego play there. Some of us are on the front end. We buy gadgets just because we love them, right? And I want to be using and experiencing the best, newest technology. But that, of course, is the early adopters and not the heart of or mass size of the marketplace.
And Dave, think also about the potential change in the format in terms of what a display is. Today, we generally think of a, pun intended, 16:9, 55, 75, 84 inch display. What if that's not that format or size? What if that's taking the glass in a boardroom and making that glass the active display? What if that's taking window at your house so you don't have a TV hanging on the wall, but your window activates to become that screen? The changes that technologies like microLED can bring to actual design within an experience environment are some of the more exciting aspects of it as well.
Yeah, I totally agree, Chris. I think back to that video that Corning did, the Life of Glass or whatever.
Exactly, yeah, I was going to bring that up.
That's where we're going with microLED. It makes it possible. And those teeny tiny, like now I'm even reading about nano LED, those are key parts of the puzzle to do. Like, as you know, Dave, my favorite subject, like light field displays, heads up AR, and real smart glasses. So not just large scale, you know, like electronics in a stadium, but we're thinking about where display, and I go back to Chris, how he started it, about display being ubiquitous in our everyday lives. They're everywhere. They're in our cars, in our self-driving cars. They're in our homes. We wear them. They're in our clothing. And micro LED just does so much to facilitate that, which is why there's so much investment in the innovation. And there's a lot of investment actually in the US. There's some really interesting companies out there who are trying to fix some of these challenges or mitigate them, like reduce the cost. There's one in New Mexico that's looking at growing the LEDs on a much larger substrate, for example, which is a huge cost factor. So he's incredibly, I'm always excited about displays, but it's particularly exciting right now, I think.
And what's the time frame for all this?
But I've seen small, like automotive sized micro LED displays. I've seen them like in real life and touched them. Both transparent and so I've seen like 7-inch, I've seen a 21-inch. So like they exist. I've seen large, obviously, like there's some micro LED products that are out in the market that aren't used in that very tight pixel pitch, but we've all seen those too. So predicting the timeline is like, I don't know. COVID's definitely had an impact on it. I know a bunch of researchers have not been able to get in their lab for 6 months. So, you know, there's that too.
Wow.
But we also see power consumption is a topic. And microLED currently uses way too much power compared to LCD. So especially over here in Europe, you know, where energy prices are four times as high as in the US, and microLED is very, very expensive to operate, not only to purchase, but also to operate. So we still need to go that route. I'm sure we'll manage that eventually, but for the time being, it's still very, very expensive to operate them.
And I might
asked earlier about when is it going to take over, right? When are we going to have that transition? I think part of it, we have to, like Chris said, we have to stop thinking about what size of display is today, what, you know, all of our sizes, 45s, 55s, whatever they are, we really need to think much more around the application and the uses and where LED, whether it's micro, mini, nano, whatever it is, what those use cases that technology is going to drive for us. Because if we just stay in that 16:9 shape, we're not going to do the transition. As soon as we start thinking beyond that, I mean, think about, just go back to desktop displays when they went from the 4:3 aspect and all of a sudden you had wide format desktop displays, how quick that jumped. Now we have curved desktop displays, but that's because we built the technology and we looked at the use cases. The same thing's going to happen with LED.
Reese.
I would agree with as digital displays become much more ubiquitous, you're going to see them jump outside of the standard aspect ratio. We live that today. We stretch these and move these in all kinds of sizes, and they're going to eat content. I saw a question on the panel about control systems. Yeah, to get the right information, the right imagery at the right time is going to take a lot of the development and improvements in control, as it just knows what I want to see there, so it's interesting and enjoyable for me. So I think what we're seeing right now, it's a change has been happening in the display business for many years, and it will be even accelerated with micro LEDs, but it's going to be a long run. It's not going to be just 2 or 3 years. We're going to see continued innovations over the next decade that is really going to be exciting to be in and participate in. And I'll plug what Chris is doing. We've never left the U.S. We've had our manufacturing here since the beginning, even though we span and produce on the other continents as well. So it's the world is an exciting place, and it's going to get more exciting as we come out of the COVID pandemic.
Brookings, South Dakota.
Brookings, South Dakota, here in the heartland, man.
Marcella, I suspect we have a number of questions. Do you want to jump in and throw some questions at these poor folks?
We do have a lot of questions. First one here says OPEC was an actual cartel that could collude on and set pricing. Display manufacturers in Asia have never had that and in fact compete aggressively. Why won't the big display manufacturers in Asia continue to have labor price and regulatory advantages that allow them to dominate going forward as they've done in the past? And really, if you own the consumer TV market, you have an advantage in every display market, and that's not easy to create from scratch.
I think that's for Chris.
Thank you for the question, Samsung. The labor deltas today between China and the U.S., being here in the Midwest, are only about 50%. When you get to transit, when you get to all the other aspects, as Asia has risen as a manufacturing center, the cost deltas are not quite as big. I see a lot of companies that are moving out of China to India, moving to Mexico, because China is no longer the low-cost labor environment. There's absolutely no doubt that this is going to be a fight going forward. But politics aside, when you look at the ability for a technology such as this to be transformational, and companies not just a Stratocaster or a DAC, but you look at the amount of money that Apple is spending in this sector. Apple owns a huge amount of the patents in the sector. Why? Because it's strategic, and they understand with the extended battery life and the capabilities of micro LED to use much less power, that this is a game changer. So I don't anticipate that any of the companies in the sector in that big display cartel today lay down and say, oh, here's the white flag, we're going to wave that and go away. But the business model is changing dramatically, and that will bring disruption.
But Apple's thinking more about wearables, are they not?
I think that they're looking at all sorts of categories that have scale to them. I think you could see wearables. I think you could see much more in automotive. I think you could see Apple is smart enough to know that if it doesn't scale, it's not worth their time. So any of those markets that have scale to them are certainly interesting to them.
Yeah, and I'd like to just echo Chris's point. I mean, if you look at like what drove LCD as a commercial technology, is the consumer TV LCD business, right? All those investments made, the price went down, then it became viable to replace like rear projection or whatever. And with micro LED, because they require it for some of these newer, the wearables, the AR, the smart glasses, there is all this investment in our commercial business, the large scale displays is just gonna be able to piggyback onto that, those technology advancements. Cause yeah, power efficiency, manufacturing yields, all those things they all need to be solved anyway.
Yeah, there's exciting things going on in the AR world. Really exciting stuff there as well.
Well, I guess being the only Asian consumer brand on this panel, I got to comment a little bit. What I can say is, you know, as having a consumer brand is very valuable for our business. It builds our brand recognition with our customers. It builds our brand recognition in the industry. Being that I'm not Chinese or Korean, I think Chris is a little nicer to me being Japanese because we've got a little bit friendlier relationships. But I think overall, I agree with everything everybody's saying, but I think also there is some value that we do have as a, as an Asian manufacturer, as a strong retail brand. We don't own every single thing under the sun, nor will we build everything under the sun. But we do have a lot of value that we can bring to this. But it is going to be interesting to see with the changes that are happening with, specifically in the Chinese market when it comes to manufacturing. It's going to definitely, with more manufacturing moving to the US or into Mexico, India and other markets, it is game changing. Those large factories, I think, that are sitting in China become less valuable to those organizations that have those, and having the ability of flexibility and being agile is going to be critical.
Another question.
So I do have to defend the Asian side.
So we have another question that says, with all the variations in DV, LED, pixel pitch, et cetera, how does the industry find, let's say, VESA standards for viewing distance, mounting, et cetera?
Well, that's nerding out.
I think that if you've seen, as you get below 2 millimeter, there has been just within the industry a 1.5, a 1.2, when you start to get below 1 millimeter. I think you'll find that there'll be practical spots of where you can put a pixel pitch, and technical salespeople will help apply the right technology to the right location for the right application. Now, will there be standards in mounting? If you have a 55 inch or a 60 inch or a 75 inch, that can maybe a standard can come into play. If you have things that are stretched outside of the normal aspect ratio, you've got specialized size to fit into this situation or that situation, then it's maybe less so. But I would say not right away, but maybe 5 years in, 10 years in, you might find standards emerging around certain aspects of these displays.
I just add, I think one of the things that's been great is I know that associations like AVIXA have really spent a lot of time on this and trying to help us figure out those standards and figure out the best viewing from it, from distance and angles. And I know there's been a lot of papers written on it that's helped a bit. But I think from a mounting perspective, the difficult challenge we have is there's not really a universal cabinet that supports every single pixel card. And so I think that's always your challenge. And then we add in, we have a lot of customers who do want custom. They want it a certain shape. They want it hung a certain way. The structure has to be done. That makes it really difficult to say this is the standard for mounting.
Another question?
Sure. As the pixels get increasingly smaller and the screens get increasingly larger, the resolutions are going to need to be insanely large. This technology is going to bypass 8K and move to 16K and 32K. Is the rest of the AV industry ready for this?
I think this gets into, these things are going to eat content. One of the things we play around with is, when will we install a display that's a billion pixels? Because right now we get way above all these other pixel counts. And then if you're going to put it in a display that size, what content are you going to feed it? And that's really going to be driving innovation outside of the micro LED technology and much as much into the control and the content side.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys have seen like the evolution of 8K, like it was coming and it's coming and it's coming and it's coming. And I think everybody's been kind of like, the panel people have been waiting on the chip people who've been waiting on the camera people. It's like everybody's waiting for somebody else to make a move because it's a big investment. And it's, you know, 4K is good enough for a lot of use cases. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes, for sure.
Yeah, Joe, content, the control, all of that's contained to it.
I'm curious, John, if you run into clients who are asking about, we want to have a 4K display, we want to have an 8K display for a video wall. Do they even understand what they're asking for?
I think they do. We really go back to, what are you trying to do with the display? And back to that whole content conversation, right? So we can build you a big display and put 4K windows effectively in throughout that display. And maybe that's what they're after. They want that big, bold experience. So we talk to them and we say, okay, how does that work? And we have control systems that can take a variety of inputs and take all those pixels and put them throughout the screen in whichever way they want to. And again, size is another conversation about what are you going to be taking this content and putting it onto to a large display. You know, how can you effectively communicate that content throughout the display?
Right.
So it's a bigger conversation to have with the customer.
So I think we have time for about one more question. How suitable will the micro LED displays be with touch and haptics interfaces for interactive video applications?
Boy, who wants that?
I can talk a lot, so it's like I'm happy to let someone take it or I'll cover it. It's up to you guys.
Go ahead, Sam.
Okay, so for touch, I think there's a few challenges there to be solved, but people are working on it. I mean, if you don't have a constrained size, you know, like how do you put a touch frame or whatever on there? I think the advantage you have for micro LED is because you have to, it's not a surface mount part that's separate. It's integral to the display. You have to put what's called this encapsulation layer on there. You're already protecting those fragile pixels from, you know, static energy, ESD, and humidity, which would like the enemies. So I think there's lots of opportunity there for innovation around interactivity. I also think you guys can disagree, like with COVID, like we're all using our own devices a lot more. And I've seen that, like how many times you go to a restaurant, you just scan a QR code. And I think this notion of BYOD in order to interact with a large display without physically touching it might be something that we see more and more.
Right. And size matters, to be honest. You know, large walls don't make sense, you know, to use as a touch wall.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, you see lots of demos and occasionally you see a museum that has it, but in practical terms, how often do you need something with multi-touch with 25 people working on the screen at once? I just don't see it.
I see
it's application based.
Yeah. I see some apps now that you can put on your phone that'll make it act like a mouse, right? So you've got your device, QR code, and then it gives you control of the display.
So the one area I think you mentioned museums because there is a place within that in certain areas, but also areas like design centers, design studios, there's still a need for it. What's interesting, I was looking at a lot of the data, and what surprised me is I thought we'd see this massive, this fall off a cliff of interactive touchscreen business. It's actually still strong, surprisingly. And there is need for this. And I think we are used to the kiosk, the self-order that a lot of industries have lived off into the QSR business, stuff like that. You could go either way on, but I think there's still going to be a need for those large interactive surfaces. And mm-hmm. It's application specific, it's market specific, customer specific. But we do have to get over the cleaning aspect and making sure that it's safe and not transferring anything. The surface is critical. But I think application is going to drive it. I think when we come out of COVID, there's still going to be a lot of need, maybe different type of need than what we have today.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.